What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast ready for 2023. On this episode, Cowley's move on from Pompey. Norwich and Crawley are also looking for new bosses. We separate the good from the bad after a frantic feast of festive football. There's scouting reports and more. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Here we are then. We are back. Our first show of the new year, talking all things Football League. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by my two pals. Adrian Clark's back with us. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Oh, yeah, very good. Very good. Looking forward to the year ahead. Hopefully growing this podcast. Tell a friend, listener. Spread the word.
That's the key. Sam Parkin, you ready for 2023?
Attack the day. 6.5 miles I've done this morning in the pouring rain. I had a Yahoo, or is it called Yazoo? The milkshake I had for my recovery. Yazoo, taking me back to my Leighton Orient days where we used to have them in the ice bath. So I am fully Gary Nevilled up.
6.5 miles. That is decent. I set myself a resolution of doing 50 press-ups and 50 sit-ups a day, right?
It's 1984.
It's not even that many, right? New Year's Day, smashed it. Yesterday, nothing.
Okay. I did get overtaken by lots of people this morning. I think a few people have got the same idea.
Yeah, well, see if they're still there this time next week. Just quickly, what's your flavour of Yazoo? I'm guessing strawberry.
It was strawberry. I think, didn't I say that? Yeah, that was always my go-to. Softened the blow a little bit. We used to train in Gants Hill at Leighton Orient, and you'd get in this ice bath that was all set up by one of the fitness guys or the physios afterwards, and you had to do 2 minutes every day, even in the depths of winter, but you'd have your little milkshake on arrival at the building. So it was always a little nice touch. I thought I'd revisit that. I've been on a bit of a health kick and I seem to have kept the weight off over Christmas somehow, which I'm delighted about.
Right, well, I've put loads on and done no exercise, so I feel bad. I don't know about you, listener. Let's move on quickly, shall we? Later we're going to tell you who had a good and who had a bad Christmas. But first, let's tackle the latest round of managerial movements. Okay, the most recent dismissal, Danny Cowley, he and his brother in Portsmouth have parted ways after a run of 9 league games without a win has left them 9 points off the playoffs. They were in charge for 22 months. They led Pompey to an 8th place finish in 2021. They only missed out on the playoffs by 2 points then. They were 10th last season. Been one of those kind of slow deaths of a management spell, this, hasn't it, Adrian? It's felt like it's been in the post for a while. They gave them as much time as they could.
I did. Yeah, one win in 14 League One games tells a story, doesn't it? And I don't think that Danny and his brother can have that many complaints when you look at the results. I just feel a bit sad about it because they put in a lot of effort. They committed to the project, you know, sacrificed a lot of family time, and they really engaged with the fans. And they did a lot of good work there. And earlier on this season, they were flying. It's just a bad run, and they just couldn't find a way out of the run. They kept changing the system. It flirted with the back three recently. Didn't really work. We've seen a number of sort of team selection changes of late as well. And they're just sort of scrabbling around, hoping for something to click. And it didn't. But, you know, someone like Ronan Curtis probably sums up their season. Normally so reliable. He's normally good for double figures with goals, number of assists. He's only got one goal this season. I'm not pinning it solely on Ronan, but players like him are important at Pompey and they weren't able to deliver.
Where do the Cowleys go next, Sam? Because obviously they've kind of tumbled back down through the leagues, haven't they, since the Lincoln days. Not that long ago, we were thinking that they were the hot young things in English football, this pair. Are they going to rock up in League Two next, or can they get another top half League One job?
I think they'll be looking League One again. To be honest, I did have this thought last night after the news broke. And yeah, I mean, having had that jump from Lincoln to Huddersfield and then getting another really, you know, big job, brilliant club in Portsmouth, it's unlikely they're going to get a club of that ilk straight away. They may have to rebuild their reputation a little bit, but I don't think there'll be a shortage of offers. I think those two have definitely got something to bring to the game, to a club, and having, you know, worked with them both, really likeable guys. I know on the touchline, the opponents will probably say the exact opposite because they're very in your face. They compete for every throw-in, every decision, and they get under the skin of the opponent. But having spent time with both of them, really open, yeah, I really like the pair of them. And I know, you know, just having spent a little bit of time in Danny's company recently, how many hours he dedicates to it, how it's his life, how, you know, he's watching games every night, how he's on the laptop thinking about the next game. I know that goes with the territory, but I think these guys are something else. So real shame, you know, echo what Adrian said there, because I think they're really invested in the local community. I've just had a little look there. I don't think they've won at home since September. And I think similarly to what happened to Dean Smith in the last fortnight, when the majority of the fans boo on the final whistle and are calling for your head, normally something has to give. So I hope they would have been given the window, because I don't think they've been backed. And that is having, you know, spoken to people about the budgets and about the type of players that they tried to sign and weren't able to match the terms they got elsewhere. So I think that the owners, if they are going to be successful, have to back the next manager with a few more funds and a better budget and more resources.
Up in the Championship, meanwhile, Sam mentions Dean Smith. Adrian, this is the one that we were all expecting. It finally happened 2 days after Christmas. He was sacked by Norwich after a run of just 3 wins in 13 Championship matches. The Athletic reporting that David Wagner is on a 4-man shortlist. Just thinking about some of the contenders, maybe Sean Dyche, not quite the right fit for Norwich. Chris Wilder, did he blow his shot with what happened at Borough? I mean, Mark Robbins is one that screams out to me.
I think Chris Wilder and Mark Robbins are the absolute standout candidates here. Chris Wilder, okay, it didn't work out from Borough, but don't forget the body of work he did at Sheffield United. I think it was just a bad fit at Borough because of the model of the club. At Norwich, I don't know whether they would accommodate his needs. He likes to run everything, doesn't he, Chris Wilder? And I think that's the stumbling block. But I also think he would have learned from the experience at Middlesbrough and would make concessions to get into the right job. He is a very, very good coach. And I think if Norwich went for David Wagner over Chris Wilder, I'd be scratching my head. Probably the same with Mark Robbins as well, who I've got a lot of time for. Wagner's was good at Huddersfield, did a terrific job, but his body of work since, it's not great. Schalke, sacked. Young Boys, sacked. The reason he's top of the shortlist is that he's worked with Stuart Webber at Huddersfield. The fans hate Stuart Webber. So I think that's a bad place to be for a new gaffer coming in at Carrow Road, knowing that you're the mate of the one that they all dislike. I think that's not the healthiest situation. I'd go for Wilder in their shoes.
Yeah, there's no one really jumping out to me. Of the two names I saw mentioned, which I thought, yeah, that could conceivably work. Scott Parker, who's subsequently gone to Bruges, obviously. Ralph Hasenhüttl, although I think that's a bit of a fall from grace, maybe, for him to go into the Championship, considered where he's been. And as we're not speaking about him today, I just wanted to have a quick nod to Alan Russell's touchline clobber yesterday, please, if you two saw it. He's gone
it
fully
yet.
Milk tray, roll neck, blazer. Could he even have been the same type of blazer that Jamie Redknapp was wearing on the telly the other day? Velvet-ish-esque. It's a yellow for me, possibly a straight red, considering you're in caretaker charge with someone else, I think. You're in
caretaker charge.
With
I think
someone
you have to wear a
trackie,
don't you? You have to wear a trackie,
Maybe you can go smart casual, but it's got to be, you've got to be under the radar to a degree, haven't you? I mean, it's bordering on the red, Clarkie. I'll let you have a look at it and then come back to me.
I think it's a classic case of the orange, isn't it? It's,
save the glow up team.
I mean, the fella is a good looking fella, but still, I mean, there was a fair bit of posing.
It's taking me back
on
to Rooney and Rossini with the, you know, sort of joint managers, but one blatantly sort of, you know, trying harder to be the manager than the other. So yeah, it's probably a red.
We'll see if he gets it based on clothing alone. That would be surprising. What was not particularly surprising was Matty Etherington lasting a full 32 days at Crawley before the club statement came. It's become clear to all parties involved that this partnership is not the right fit to carry the club forward and achieve our goals, said Director of Football and Interim Chief Executive Chris Galley. As a result, we've mutually decided to move in a different direction. Sam, I wonder if this was before or after Etherington heard that club coach Eamon Preston Johnson was going to be in the dugout for the game against Stevenage. I mean, it's easy to, and sort of fun to laugh at the situation Crawley are in because the people who are running it, but it's not so funny for the supporters. And I mean, this is just ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, it's been a calamitous week, hasn't it? I mean, they would have been, I wouldn't say infused, but some good players came through the door in the summer, no question. and they were continually linked with, you know, players that could probably have, you know, elevated them to a team that were dead certs for the playoffs minimum. And they've still got some good players there. But this has just been incredible. I mean, Tom Nichols is coming into his prime. He should be a player that you're building a promotion challenge around, not selling, not allowing to leave to a relegation rival. And I mean, this is by no means having a go at Tom, because with new owners at Gillingham, it probably makes absolute financial sense for Tom to move on at this point in his career. I'm sure it's probably a lucrative deal for the level. But it sounds like he turned up at training and was told by the manager, I don't know if it was Etherington still in charge, that he wasn't allowed to play him, wasn't allowed to pick him. He was being sold. So it sounds like there's more senior players that are on their way out. And yeah, to get the news that the co-chairman was going to come and help Darren Byfield, former teammate of mine, I'm sure Darren's played by the book, as you have to when you're in employment. But that must have been an incredible, difficult position that he's been put in over the last couple of games. It sounds like the performance was actually all right at Stevenage. I think the 3-1 maybe flattered them. So the players obviously gave their all. But yeah, this is an incredible situation, really. I don't know what's going to happen next. You'd have to be desperate to take that role, I would suggest. And, you know, Matty Everington and Simon Davis, having had stable jobs and taking the jump into league management, have been severely burnt, haven't they? And I'm sure anyone who's contemplating taking this gig's got to take a little bit of a deep breath and really think about what they're doing.
The other side of that is, though, Clark, if you're out of work and you get offered the Crawley job, it's a free hit in some respects, because if it all goes wrong, you just say, it's not me, it's the owners, they're nuts.
Yeah, I suppose. But I think people, like Sam said, people might question why you'd want to work for owners like that. I don't know. It wouldn't appeal to me. I think Sam's right. I think it's managers that are desperate to get a chance, or first-time managers. But look what's happened to Kevin Betsy. Gave up a very good job at Arsenal to go there. Same with these two guys at Peterborough. So it wouldn't be for me. I mean, once you've got board members offering their services in the technical area, I think it's a recipe for disaster. So I'd just give it a massive wide berth.
Same. Right. In better news, Dean Holden, weeks after appearing on the Fit and Proper guest test, gets a job. I mean, are they two linked? Not for us to say, but he is the Charlton Athletic manager. Picked up his first win in 90 minutes with a 3-1 victory at Portsmouth on New Year's Day. Not bad this, Sam. He knocks Brighton out of the League Cup in his first game. He's going to Old Trafford next week. I mean, what a couple of weeks for him. He had a chat with us and now he's going to manage at the Theatre of Dreams.
Yeah, amazing. And it sounded like he had a bit of involvement in that EFL Cup win over Brighton. A little bit of a mixed bag since. I think it was the first half, wasn't it, at Oxford, where they were dire, and he made quite a number of changes from the Peterborough draw, which was questioned quite heavily by the supporters. But, you know, we're not on the training ground. You know, heavy workload over the festive period. You've got to try and rotate, and Charlton are probably in a position where they can do that somewhat. So I wouldn't be too critical of him. Went to Portsmouth and got a brilliant win, a place I think they've won 7 or 8 on the spin, which is just
amazing.
Yeah. Mind-blowing. I think I've been there for a couple of them under Lee Bowyer previously. So yeah, that's a brilliant win. Really liked his reintegration of some of the younger players. Aaron Henry, who we did on the scouting report earlier in this season. He's been involved, obviously, Carnu, a young lad, and Lee Byrne getting minutes as well. So as I've been saying all season, that is not a bottom half team by any stretch of the imagination. They've got good players there. Just need some belief, probably need some tactical tweaks, and they'll be absolutely fine. But yeah, chuff for Dean, because we know that he's very keen to get back in, and he's gone to a brilliant club. Let's not beat around the bush. That's a hugely well-supported club in London, and I'm sure he's chuffed with that gig.
What about Mark Jackson, Clarkie? Somebody who you have some knowledge of. He's the new coach of MK Dons. He'd worked his way up through the various youth ranks at Leeds, was previously with the first team before he took this one. Won his first game against Forest Green, defeats against Peterborough and Plymouth since, which is fair enough. If you're bottom of the league, they're near the top, aren't they? What's he going to add to MK?
Yeah, he's a good lad. I like him. I interviewed him recently when he was at Leeds. Got on really well. I've spoken to him already today, as it happens, on the radio. And yeah, he's He's very determined to make a success of it, obviously. But he's a people person. He's someone that connects with players and staff, and hopefully the fans as well. And I think he'll just be working on that home form, playing without fear. I think that's been a problem. They've won twice at home all season. Before he joined, they'd won once at home all season. He's got one win under his belt. I think he'll be trying to play with a bit more bravery, trying to get the fans going. I think there'll be a little bit of Jesse Marsh style wildness about their pressing at times. Maybe not quite as wild, but he wants to mimic, I think, the energy that Leeds United bring. He's been working alongside Jesse Marsh there. So yeah, I think he wants to keep the good football, but bring better off the ball work, certainly more energy to it. And if they do that, I think they'll be all right. I looked at the fixtures and they've got 8 of the bottom half to come at home. That will make or break their season, the results in those games.
We'll see how he does. All right, given so much has happened since last we met, we thought we'd wrap everything up into a neat package. We call it Good Christmas, Bad Christmas, and it comes next. Pretty simple concept, this. Some teams had a good time over the festive period, others not so much. We'll start with the goods, and in the Championship, West Bromwich Albion weren't busy enough under Bruce, but the Baggies' Carlos Corber ran the show over Christmas, shooting all the way up to 9th in the table, courtesy of a hat-trick of wins to nil against Bristol City, Preston and Reading. Sam, what have you noticed about West Brom that's changed, other than, you know, not so much bile around the Hawthorns now that Steve Bruce is not in charge?
Yeah, without being too disrespectful, I think they've just got a better coach in there who's probably doing tactical shape work and patterns of play and such like on the training ground. He's very demanding, we know that. And it's paid off, hasn't it, in a big way, I think, defensively. And I wouldn't have said, you know, Huddersfield were watertight under Corbett, and we know that he liked to kind of pay special attention to the opponent and try and stop them. But yeah, even I've been surprised by the amount of clean sheets, just 2 in 12 under Bruce, 7 in 10 under Corbett, which is just staggering numbers. The goalkeeper, Alex Palmer, had played a little bit under Bruce, but he's been an ever-present. I think he's got 11 clean sheets in his 15 games, which is just remarkable if you think he was on loan at Plymouth. Memory serves me right. I think he went for Luton.
He's had some good loan spells, hasn't he? He's been good wherever he's gone on loan. I think he's played pretty well.
Do you remember last year when Luton had that period where they had about 4 keepers? Mm-hmm. He was one that went there and had 2 or 3 games. And yeah, he came back this season. It looked like he was going to be the number 2, and he's been incredible. And I think offensively, there wasn't too much wrong with Steve Bruce's West Brom. Although I think getting Swift and Jed Wallace in the same side, getting that balance was problematic. They've been able to do that. And now he has an out-and-out striker in DK, which Steve Bruce didn't have, and that, you know, paid off in a big way yesterday, the type of goal that he scored. Centre of the park, because Lou's been a revelation recently. But yeah, I just think all round, there seems to be belief there. It's a better brand of football. And I don't want to go too early here, but if any teams is going to put pressure on the top two, you've got to say Middlesbrough and West Brom. You know, the form they're in, those two, I'm not saying they're going to do it, but you can see these runs continuing because they've got such belief now.
Yeah, no, the momentum's huge, isn't it, behind them. Those clean sheets, obviously laying the platform. You look at the back four, though, Townsend, Peters, O'Shea, Furlong. It's not the strongest back four in the Championship at all. So you've got to credit the team.
He's got Peters playing in the middle, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. You've got to credit the organisation ahead of them, as well as those guys, you know, being disciplined since he took charge. One thing that I heard yesterday, I don't know if you've seen or heard this, is about the individual player meetings he's been having. Apparently, each player gets a 15-minute sit-down with Senor Carlos in the run-up to a game, which I haven't heard of before. I never experienced that myself. But it seems a very simple concept that is worth trying, you know, like just this is what I expect of you in this game. This is, you know, this is who you'll be up against. I want you to do this. This is what you can do. I mean, you probably don't need 15 minutes, even if it was a 5-minute sit down with each player. I think it makes total sense. Just that attention to detail, I think, can make such a difference. And I think without knowing how Steve Bruce worked, I think that attention to detail is the big thing, the huge difference.
Certainly seems that way. Well, another team who are thriving under new management are Luton Town. Rob Edwards' feet firmly tucked under the table at Kenilworth Road. He led them to a trio of wins against Norwich, QPR and Huddersfield over Christmas. Big for him, isn't it, Adrian? Given how the Watford thing turned out, you feel like he needed a strong start at Luton.
Yeah, I think, yeah, he was at Watford. He knew he needed to get the fans on side, and wins are the best way to do that. And I think they love him already. One thing that's really stood out has been his changes from the bench. In situation, they were down to 10 men against Norwich, and he took off a midfielder, put forward on Cordy Woodrow, who's obviously had limited game time this season, comes on, scores the winner. Against Huddersfield, the draw in the game. Is he happy with a point? Nah, wants to go for it, makes attacking changes, and they pay off. He's also been lucky in that the team have brought their shooting boots over Christmas. I mean, some brilliant goals. I mean, they've scored, how many got? They got 7 in 3 games. I think at least 5 of the 7, absolute quality strikes. So, yeah, great start for him. He's kept the aggression, the bite, the Luton characteristics. And over time, I think he'll look to add a little bit more control in possession. But in the here and now, they're still awkward to play against, and they're very spirited.
Another team who had a good Christmas were Millwall. Gary Rowett was on Soccer Special on Monday, enjoying the Championship action from the comfort of the playoff places. His team took 7 points from 9 over Christmas. Sam, in our last show before the break, we were looking ahead to their game at Watford and saying what a big one it was for them, given how poor they'd been on the road. That feels like a kind of transformative result for them.
Yeah, they've played really well. I mean, that was a tremendous performance. You know, despite Watford going down to 10, Millwall came out so fast, absolutely peppered the Watford goal before opening the scoring. I think this is all, well, a lot of it is down to Gary Rowett being more attack-minded in the last few months, really. I think it's 13 or 14 games now they've been playing the 4-2-3-1. They've lost twice. It's really been a great change, I think, at the Den. More goal threat. I think that position wide on the right-hand side is still the one that he kind of rotates with a little bit. Bury has played there. Bennett, Honeyman played at the weekend. Obviously, rotation is key this time of year. Freshened it up in the middle of the pitch as well with Callum Stiles, who started the season brilliantly, but has gone off the boil a little bit. He came in for Saville. But above anything else, it's getting other players chipping in with goals, because if Fleming didn't score and Cooper didn't cause some carnage from a corner free kick, I thought they'd probably plateau and maybe fall away. So to get Bradshaw scoring, I'm going to butcher his name. I want to say Vogelsammer. Might be the L and the G the other way round. I always do that. But get him getting his maiden goal as well. That's a real tonic, I think, because the criticism from Millwall supporters, I know, and the people around the club, is that they've lacked that, you know, central striker or forward players that are going to chip in with goals. So Bradshaw getting the brace, the 2.5, the other day.
Yeah.
great for him. And yeah, their man Luton, away from the kind of much fancied sides, they're looking like the two, aren't they? That could maybe upset the party, or whatever the phrase is.
People's champions, eh? Yeah. Just a quick one to add. I would say much the same as Sam about Millwall. In the wins against Watford and Rotherham, they had a total of 50 shots. 23 against Watford, 27 against Rotherham. I think 11 of those are on target. Definitely more attack-minded, and it's paying off.
How about a bad Christmas for Championship teams? Let's go Wigan. Kolo Touré, more like, oh no, Touré. Rock bottom of the Championship. They've lost their last 3 games 4-1 against Borough, Sunderland, and most recently Hull City. Hindsight's Matt Davis-Adams here, Adrian. Why would you give a rookie manager the task of avoiding relegation? That's always a head-scratcher for me.
Yeah, it was a tough gig to go into, wasn't it? A little bit like Nathan Jones at Southampton. It's a gig you can't turn down, but you know it's going to be a bit of a nightmare, or at least at first. It's going to be really hard. They shouldn't have sacked Liam Richardson, in my opinion. I think that was daft. He'll probably end up at Portsmouth now and help to revive their fortunes. That's the word on the street anyway. Yeah, 3-4-1 losses in a row is damaging for a new manager, because, I mean, Sam's been in dressing rooms. Obviously, a lot of the time you do get a new manager bounce, but if you don't, obviously then doubts immediately creep in about the gaffer, when you start to question whether he actually knows what he's doing. And he could be doing a brilliant job behind the scenes. He could be doing absolutely everything right, Kolo Touré. But because of the results, the players will now be doubting him. I know that they will be. And because they don't want to blame themselves. Players like Tefla, they're non-stick. It's not me. It's not my fault. It's someone else's. And that's not a great place to be in at the start of your managerial career. So, yeah, he needs a win, and he needs it fast.
I was trying to be kind speaking about them the last few days, of, you know, because they have had injury problems defensively. But Watmore was back yesterday. Bad, they scored with their four attempts on target, Hull City, in that game. It's desperately poor after quite a bright opening game when I saw them at Millwall. But I don't want to beat a man when he's down. But was Kolo Touré in charge of the defending set pieces at Leicester? Wasn't that catastrophic over the last year?
I didn't know that.
I'm thinking he would have had a say though, wouldn't he, in what they've been doing defensively? And
they've been so bad, Leicester.
I mean, this is a team from just watching the goals and seeing them live. This is a team that is trying to play out from the back, and they clearly don't have good enough ball playing defenders to do so. And in the predicament they're in, it seems pretty crazy. And I agree with you. I think that the football had become a little bit tired, hadn't it? And the supporters have become a little bit restless with Liam Richardson, because it was a bit functional, even in their promotion from League One. It wasn't kind of getting them off the edge of their seats. And I understand that there's a necessity for change in time, but I don't think the time was now. I think to be stabilised and avoid relegation in the Championship would have been probably quite a likely outcome under Liam Richardson.
Well, Rotherham had to make a change of manager, not through their own choosing, when Paul Warne left for Derby. Matt Taylor now faced with the stark realities of life in the Championship. They've won 1 in 12. That was a shot win at Bramall Lane back in November. Just a place and a point outside the relegation zone are Rotherham. And Adrian had a look at their fixtures, and it's pretty horrible. Blackburn, Watford, Sunderland, Sheffield United to come next. It might get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, that's not good. They were battered by Millwall. But for the goalkeeper, Victor Johansson, that could have been 6 or 7. And they looked like a team that were going down. It's not an easy job, that Rotherham. I think behind the scenes, it's not an easy club to manage. I think Paul Warne did great work there. Great work. And maybe they'd appreciate that now. Matt Taylor, it was another one, an opportunity to step up two divisions. Probably felt he couldn't say no, but to follow Warne was never going to be easy. And yeah, he's got to stem the tide at the back. That is the problem. They're conceding way too many goals. And you know, Rotherham aren't going to score a hatful, are they? Not with the players that they've got. So their only hope of survival is if he improves the team without the ball.
Yeah, 7 injuries at the moment as well. No, true. Eves, yeah, or Ogbeni at Millwall. And Ben Wiles, I think, is probably their best player, isn't he, Adrian? He's out, I think, long-term.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff I've read is the anger's kind of pointed towards the chairman, Tony Stewart, I think it is, who... He's been in charge since, remember when they had that points penalty, I think 2008 or something like that. So he's been on a hell of a journey with him. But I think that the feeling is that, you know, the manager needs backed in the window. He needs more bodies. I think Matt Taylor was pretty honest the other day, just basically saying, I haven't got the quality to cope, to get points in the Championship at the moment. And the other thing I thought was, knowing the type of fella Paul Warne is, and having spent a bit of time with Matt Taylor, surely Matt Taylor would have phoned Paul Warne after Paul Warne had got the Derby gig and just had a chat about what he was walking into, Taylor, at Rotherham. I would think that conversation probably happened. You know, I'm speculating a little bit here, but I'm sure Matt Taylor would have been so thorough in his thinking, his research before he took that job, because clearly going from a really stable one at Exeter to the team in the Championship with conceivably the lowest budget, the toughest challenge. He must have thought long and hard, and it's proven a really tough gig.
Makes more sense when you say that, why Paul Warne swapped the Championship for League One. He's had a good Christmas though, Clarkey, as much as it pains me to say it. Derby up to fourth. My stepdad went to the game against Forest Green before Christmas. He's a big Derby fan. And he said it was almost unenjoyable because there was absolutely no jeopardy about the game whatsoever. And he just knew from the fifth minute that it was going to be a comfortable win. And that's not an emotion that Derby County supporters have experienced much over the last few years.
That is true. Yeah, I was at one of those games, Sheffield Wednesday against Cambridge this week. We'll get to that shortly. Zero jeopardy in that. Now 15 unbeaten. Don't concede goals. So I think 6 clean sheets in 7. very stable, the team. The youngster at the back, I think, is getting rave reviews here in Cashin. Good partnership with Forsyth. It was interesting what John Coleman said, the Accrington boss, after they got battered 4-0. He just said that they pressed the life out of us. We had no answer to it. And that's my takeaway from watching Derby under Warne and Derby in previous seasons. Quite simple. They're running more and they're running harder, faster, more for each other. Everything is a bit more energetic. And football's quite a simple game sometimes. If you've got a group of players that do that, you're going to pick up a lot of positive results. So, yeah, well done, Derby. Obviously, they drew at Bolton as well over Christmas, which was a good result. So, I don't think top two is particularly achievable given the quality up there. But playoffs are looking good for Derby.
Yeah, I spoke to Paul Warne the other day on the radio and I asked him about the younger players because... Mm-hmm. Mainly because I get muddled up with them and because there's so many of them, Knights and Birds and Sibleys and all that. And I asked him if he was like pleasantly surprised when he walked in. Was that an added bonus for him? Mm. And he said about Cashin that everyone immediately told him that this is the one. You know, he's taken to playing the first team like duck to water. He said in training the first couple of days just wasn't having it at all. He was just like, what are they on about? But then he concurred there with you, Clarkie, that... He's been a revelation this season defensively, probably the pick of those young guys. So yeah, and he also said just a brilliant, you know, balance between great senior professionals, Dad's Army, he calls them, I think he said, you know, likes of McGoldrick and Horahan and some brilliant young players. And I thought, you know, very, I suppose, off-brand really, that Horahan goal yesterday, brilliant, slick passing move. And he's got Corey Smith playing right back and Lewis Sibley playing left back, I think a little bit out of necessity more than design. And Corey Smith made a little kind of underlapping run, received it, played it into Horahan, and he passed it in from kind of the edge of the D. It was a wonderful goal. So yeah, he's I think we were a little bit reluctant to go too heavy because we thought it might be quite a contrast in what they were doing under Liam Richardson. But, you know, it's proven to be a really good appointment.
What about Plymouth, Sam? Top of the pile in League One, 6 points clear of third place Ipswich after wins against Cheltenham, Wickham and MK. We've got them in our good Christmas list, but you broke news to us this morning that it might not be such a good Christmas after all.
Yeah, it was just late last night. I watched the post-match presser from Russell Martin after the Swansea-Burnley game. And he was asked about Morgan Whittaker, obviously on loan at Plymouth, starring. He's 9 goals, 7 assists now, and obviously had a brilliant game yesterday against MK Dons. And he basically, it sounded like he doesn't really need him back, or I don't know what exactly is going on there, whether he just doesn't fancy him or if he doesn't fit into the culture of the group. I don't know. You never know what the personal relationship between player and manager has been like or is like, but it sounds like the club maybe see this as an opportunity to cash in this window. Whether that Plymouth are going to have the type of funds to prize him away from Swansea on a permanent deal, I would doubt. So maybe he's going to be recalled and flogged to somewhere with a few more quid or maybe a club in the Championship, because he was speaking about the owner seeing him as an asset. And, you know, obviously it's going to come a little bit more clear in the next couple of days. And that is obviously going to spell big problems for Plymouth, because he's been their talisman. He had a 5-game kind of blank where he didn't score or assist, but he's come really back to the fore over the Christmas period. And yeah, he was electric the other day in what is just a machine at the moment. They are absolutely flying. And I thought even more ominous for the rest is that they're starting to score from dead balls as well. I don't think that's been a particular strength of them, two centre-halves with goals from back-to-back free kicks in games. So yeah, incredible job Schumacher's doing. And maybe they'll stay the test of time this year and not capitulate like I predicted last year.
A machine driven by Schumacher. Sheffield Wednesday, Clarkie, you saw them dismantle Cambridge. Closest challenges to Plymouth at the moment, and another team who managed to make the most of the congested schedule over the last few weeks.
Yeah, up to second in the division. They also beat Port Vale 2-0, 1-2-1 at Fleetwood. Had 20 shots to 10 in that game on the road. I was really impressed with them against Cambridge. They made it look easy. Cambridge were really bad, though. They didn't lay a glove on them. Quite passive. No aggression about their play. But yeah, Sheffield Wednesday, made the pitch massive, good movement, interchanging positions, you know, positional rotation. It was good to watch, all without Barry Bannon. And Josh Windass was the star of the show, getting a hat trick, three sort of really good drilled right-footed shots. Malik Wilkes down the right-hand side, probably not trusted to play wing-back against the better teams in the division, but home to Cambridge, I think Darren Moore was right to unleash him, and he was an absolute menace. Yeah, lots of good performances. George Byers was superb in the heart of midfield. And at the back, everyone at Hillsborough that I spoke to was raving about Mark McGuinness. We'll have to do a scouting report on him soon. Him or Reece James. Two low knees at the back. Both had terrific matches, even though they weren't put under a lot of pressure. So yeah, look, Chef Weds are decent. I think they'll, they've got a good chance at top two.
Clarke, you've seen them more than me. And in the last couple of weeks, I've kind of said that Plymouth and Ipswich, you can easily talk about their identity, their style of play.
Yeah, yeah.
What is Sheffield Wednesdays?
It's a good question because I still think they're scrabbling for it. I think the back three is the thing. It's definitely a 3-5-2 that is their shape. I think their identity is a little bit like Sheffield United's was under Chris Wilder in regards to, you know, using those wing-backs, getting it wide, them hugging the touchline, maybe the Liam Palmer down the right and Reece James down the left, the wide centre-backs, they join in and create 2v1 overloads, sort of underlapping centre-halves. They're a footballing team that play through the thirds. It's just, you know, they don't always play with that much intensity. They always seem to sort of play at half pace when I've seen them. But in this game, the attitude was great and they zipped it around and they won 5-0. I mean, it could have been 8.
Thanks, mate. So, I know the answer now.
Go on.
You just give me the answer.
All right, good.
Always informative and educational, what the FL. So that's the good Christmas, League One-wise. The bad Christmas, this was an easy pick. Forest Green Rovers, rock bottom of the division. 4 straight defeats. Ian Birchnell's got to be feeling the heat, hasn't he, Adrian?
Well, the fans were giving him stick. There's some quotes saying that his wife and children were at a recent game and it was quite upsetting because of some of the stuff that was being shouted at him. You know, it's par for the course as a manager, isn't it, that you get that flack. He's got to sort out the defence. It's a little bit like Rotherham, but I think Rotherham have got more injuries than Forest Green, if I'm right in thinking. But they've conceded 49 in 25 games. So it's 2 a game. You'll go down if you concede 2 a game, because you can't need 3 to win each week. That's just unachievable, isn't it? So I think it's a case of going back to basics, working very hard on maybe pressing a bit more energy out of possession, defending from front to back, because they can't seem to absorb pressure very well, Forest Green. I think it's fine margins. I don't think they were bad in the last game against Port Vale, but once they conceded, they crumbled. And I think that's been a bit of a theme this season. They've let their heads drop. It's not looking good, got to say, for Birchnell or FGR.
Just seen literally half an hour ago that Connor Wickham's left.
Just what I was about to say to you. Yeah, he's got 6 goals, so that's not going to help them very much, is it?
Do you think, Sam, that might be a case of he knows other teams want him, and even if he likes the manager, he's thinking, it's not much fun here. It's all getting a bit toxic. Maybe I might enjoy myself somewhere else.
I'd imagine the conversation when he joined was just come and play, score some goals, and we'll let you go in January.
Oh, okay.
But they've got Jamil Matt, obviously, who it doesn't look like he fancies, does it? Because he's been so prolific for them. And I did notice Matt Stevens was back on the bench last couple of games, but there is speculation about him. Do you remember he was close to moving, wasn't he? There was a lot of interest about a year ago before his injury. Whether he'll see a better place to stick around and try and score some goals until the summer, we'll have to wait and see. But those two in tandem, I mean, they could be the answer, couldn't they?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of tight games and they're not particularly prolific right now. So it could turn for him.
I'm doing the commentary, Adrian, on Forest Green against Birmingham in the FA Cup on Saturday. Am I going to have to start prepping Forest Green's reserves, or do you go in with this with the first team thinking, well, if we can cause a cup set, maybe that keeps me in a job for a couple of weeks more?
Edward Adams derby.
Yeah, it is. I'd go in with my strong team if I was Birmingham. I mean, they need the match practice. They need to improve, don't they? There's no, your first choice 11 is not going to improve if they don't play together. That'd be my outlook.
Okay, great. Well, if they make 11 changes, it'll be you I'll be shaking my fist at 12:25. A good Christmas in League Two for Sutton, like a well-run university degree course. 2-1s all over the gaff for them over the Christmas period. Last three all finished that way. They're just 3 points outside the League Two playoff places. So they might not be one season wonders then, Sam.
No, doesn't sound like it. And they've re-signed Adjiboy as well. I think that went through before the last round of games. So, yeah, I mean, that's great news for them. I've just scribbled down some nonsense, basically, on Sutton. But I just think remarkable that they've got, apart from the goalkeeper, it's the same side. And give or take the subs as well than last season. So, incredible consistency. I think they've got real strong mentality. Clearly amazing at home. 4 straight wins there. Only Stevenage and Orient have taken more points at home, which is just an incredible achievement. The only defeat in their most recent really good run of 7 games, the only defeat came at Leyton Orient in a 2-0 defeat. So, like, incredibly consistent right now. And, huge credit to Matt Gray. And they get labelled like a, you know, back-to-front team, reliant on set pieces. They've only scored 6 set-piece goals throughout the campaign. So they get goals from different positions, and all credit to them. The last team to beat Wimbledon before their 10-match unbeaten run, and did the business again yesterday. And coming from behind in the last 2 home games to win late on, they've just got an incredible, incredible resolve.
Another team who had a good Christmas, they're having a really good season, is Stevenage. They're second, 2 points behind Leyton Orient, but more significantly, a 12-point buffer between they and the playoff pack. What do you find most inspirational about Steve Evans' management, Adrian?
I don't know. It's not his behaviour, but I'm impressed by the team. I am. I saw them live at King's Lynn. Different sort of match, obviously, but they played a bit of football in the second half once they got their noses in front. They've got good players. Luke Norris, Jordan Roberts, two that really stand out. And at the back, Carl Piergiani. He's had a good Christmas. Did you see that? He scored 3 goals from centre-half in the last 2 matches, 2 against Crawley, 1 against the Gills. So, strong at the back, very well organised. They run their legs off for Steve Evans. They're super fit. And they've got Villa in the FA Cup this weekend. And I don't know, it wouldn't surprise me if they made life quite tricky for Villa in that game. So yeah, everything is rosy in Steve Evans' garden.
We can't say the same about Gillingham, Sam. My goodness me. Just looking at the table, their position, their wins and goals scored made me really depressed earlier. And I don't support Gillingham. Rock bottom of the Football League, 2 wins from 23, 7 goals scored. They haven't won a game since the 1st of October. This takeover you talk of, is that going to change anything? Because it's quite remarkable, despite those stats, that they are still within touching distance. They're, what, 5 points off third bottom Hartlepool, and they've got a game in hand. They should be down already, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I can't remember a club having this type of problem scoring goals for half a season. Clarkey, I don't know if you... I remember being at St Johnston, and it was maybe just prior to Christmas, and we scored 1 goal in 5 or 6 games or something, and it was turgid, and you could feel the midfielders and the defenders' eyes on me, on us every time the centre forward stepped out onto the training pitch, you useless shower of... But this is just unprecedented. And I think it's just rinse and repeat at the moment. They start quite brightly, they go a goal behind, it just fizzles out without creating anything. And I think the most alarming thing from this defeat, 5 of their 7 goals have been set pieces as well. And they pose no threat at all from the set piece. You'd think who's ever in charge of set pieces right now at Gillingham is working overtime, trying to just come up with some little movements to get them some more goals, because they're not going to score in open play. I think Kashka and Mandron have got 3 between them. It's just incredible. And the defence has got a mistake in it as well. So, I mean, Neil Harris has done well to hang on. As much as I like Neil, I've got so much respect for him, but he must be coming under, you know, serious scrutiny from the supporters. But it sounds like from the absolute bizarre little videos we've seen from the new owners that they've got his backing, which is a really good thing. And for him and continuity, and if he can have a good window and save them from what looks like a potential relegation, he will be a hero. So, yeah, give him 4 or 5 players in the front positions in particular and see if he can turn this around.
1 goal in 11 league games. Adrian.
It's unreal, isn't it?
If there's ever a case for someone not just getting a refund of your season ticket money, that is it, isn't it? I mean,
is there not someone on the fringes who could just get chucked in and get him free goals?
Neil Harris, surely he's got a better chance of scoring a goal than the great strikers.
Best finisher I ever saw alive. So there you go.
He was a finisher as well. He must be so frustrated. He did lay down the gauntlet, didn't he, this week after the last game. Basically said, look, you can get rid of me, it's fine. Or we can get rid of the players and change them. Up to you. I think I would give him different players.
He said the same at the end of last season, didn't he?
He did. And yeah, it doesn't look good that he hasn't been able to fix it, that he hasn't been able to create enough chances. It doesn't look good. But his back record is excellent as a gaffer. So that's why I'd stick with him and get some new players in.
All right, that was good Christmas, bad Christmas, particularly bad for Gillingham. Guys, maybe you want to listen to the scouting report. You might hear of somebody who could help you out in future. That's coming next. Right, first scouting reports of 2023. This has been a massive hit. I know of several EFL clubs who hang on every word that Adrian and Sam say in this section. Clarkie, you continue to go after my heart by picking people with amusing names to me. Leif Davis. I mean, we're not in autumn anymore, but I still appreciate it. Signed from Leeds in the summer. Was in the Champ on loan last season, wasn't he? And now he's doing good things for Ipswich.
I think Leeds might have made a mistake. They've not got very many good left backs, Leeds United. And I really like the look of him, Leif Davis. He was at Bournemouth. Scott Parker had him and he got a fair bit of game time there. He's 23 years of age, so he's a good age. And he's having an excellent season. Not too many thrills and, you know, he's just nippy. He's got a good turn of pace. He's not particularly big or strong, but he's quick. He looks like a fullback. He's nimble, athletic. And he's got an excellent left foot, a really, really good left foot that's created 7 assists so far this season. 4 of those have been from corners, 3 of them wicked in-swingers. So he's a very handy person to have on set pieces. But from the bits I've seen of Leif Davis, when he gets into those areas inside the final third, when he gets a bit of ground ahead of him, the standout quality that I see is that he plays with his head up. He's not one of these just head down, I'm going to fizz it into the area, high or low. He looks up and he picks people out. And he's done that for a number of the chances that he's created. In terms of key passes, he's second only in League One to Barry Bannon. Both of those take set plays. So I think that factor comes into play. But even from an open play, he's creating just under two chances a game. So yeah, he's a good player. Looks like a fullback that could easily play in the Championship. And that's where I'd expect him to be this time next year with Ipswich Town.
We'll hear more about him as the season goes on, by the sounds of it. What about your pick then, Sam? It is Lewis Warrington. What I really like about this kid, and this is the only thing that I really know about him, is that on the 22nd of August, he made his Everton debut against Fleetwood in the League Cup. And on the 3rd of September, he made his Fleetwood debut against Wickham in the league.
Yeah, he played a few minutes in the EFL Cup for his parent club. He's a season ticket holder in the Lower Gladys Street end. I think it's the Lower Gladys Street. Is that right, Matt?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Gladys Street is the end, yeah.
Gladys Street, yeah. He signed a new contract. Everton, really highly thought of. He's a Birkenhead lad. He's from a place called Seacombe. And he was at Tranmere for 17 games last season, which is his local club. He did really well playing as a box-to-box midfielder. He did play further forward when he was a kid, I think, but he's been more of a deep lying number 4 for Everton, and that's where he's playing for Fleetwood. But Mickey Mellon saw him as someone who could do a bit of everything last season. He played 17 games towards the tail end of the campaign, a goal and a couple of assists. But yeah, this year I saw him at Fleetwood in that cup game at Ebbsfleet, if you recall. He was the best player by a mile. The biggest compliment I can give him is he looked like a 28-year-old. You know, the scanning of the pitch, taking the ball under severe pressure, always looking to play forward. Reminded me a little bit of Michael Carrick with that progressive passing, always looking to thump the ball into a teammate with his right foot. He's got a lovely range. Scored a brilliant goal against Oxford City in the FA Cup. I think the previous round, a curler from the edge of the box. So I think he can probably do more in those terms, but he's playing a role at Fleetwood where he's just anchoring the midfield. Everything goes through him. A little bit light on the stats, given the position he plays, but best pass success percentage at Fleetwood. 80.3%. He basically never gives the ball away. He didn't in that game. And called the general at Everton by his teammate, so he can mix it as well in that deep line kind of defensive mode. And this is the bit that I thought I'd get you hanging on every word. I found this on the Fleetwood website just prior to the Christmas period. We aren't training on Christmas Day, but I need to keep an eye on what I eat at Christmas dinner. I will have a little Christmas dinner and then we'll make sure the buffet is spread out over the course of the night. So I just need to watch what I eat. Now, I'll take you into the parking household on Christmas Day here. There's not a buffet. There's maybe a turkey sandwich and a few chocolates, but what is this buffet? I did, the thought of him going over at 2 a.m. just to get another sausage roll before retiring. Is it a 6 a.m. finish? Yeah, tremendous.
We'll do you know what the sprouting report, shall we?
Yeah, the sprout. My Christmases as a kid, I do remember having the Christmas dinner quite early and then having a buffet
Excellent.
Tea.
That's what I want to hear.
These days, I think for the last 20 years, once the dinner's happened, you're done, aren't you? You're just totally stuffed.
The cheese board certainly replaced the buffet in recent years, certainly within the middle classes.
There's terrific detail.
Well, let's keep an eye on him.
I'm sure the question was mundane and he's just excelled himself there, isn't he?
We love it, Lewis. He might be star of Tweet of the Week before too long at that rate. Yeah, so that is Luke Davis and Lewis Warrington, the subject of this week's scouting report. Right, before we go, I mentioned Tweet of the Week. Really, really excited to get your takes on this one, because for me, in a lot of ways, this is the best one we've ever had. It comes from Carlos Corberan. You know, I like to throw in a manager's tweet every so often. We had that one from Joey Barton, which had all the subtext of what an intelligent and selfless and brilliant man that Joey Barton is. This one from Carlos Corberan after their latest win at the Hawthorns, where they are unbeatable at the moment, is simply a picture of the match action against Reading. You can see one of the stands, which has got West Bromwich Albion Football Club written on it. The players are there playing their football and it just says team spirit, hashtag WBA. It's like a work of art, Sam, if you see the picture that goes with it as well. Simplicity can be genius at times, and I think Carlos has shown the way forward for other managers here.
Yeah, I really like it. It's a tweet that I'd have been pleased with myself. Simplistic. I'd like to think it's him that's taken it. He's just gone for a little wander. he could have potentially been Bielsa's guy in the bush, couldn't he? We will never know, although we probably do know that it wasn't him. But what I'm quite looking forward to seeing is after a 3-0 home reserve reverse is just rubbish, full stop, and a half empty main stand. So until he does that,
yeah,
it's only an 8, but top stuff, Carlos.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautifully framed photograph, isn't it? It looks the biz with the West Bromwich Albion Football Club, you know, very prominent. I mean, it's a great advert as well for Ideal Heating. That's all I can see when I see the picture. Team spirit. I mean, he's tweeting from a good place, isn't he? They're absolutely on fire at the moment. He could have tweeted anything. You know, they got a million likes or thousands of likes from the Baggies fans and loads of nice comments. So, it's when they lose. Is he going to front up or not? That's the big question.
Do you think he's gone for the team spirit because it was a hard-fought, gritty 1-0? Would he have gone for some, you know, flair, exclamation mark, if it had been a 4-0?
And you've also got to think about the backdrop of the issues off the pitch.
Yeah,
the fans sort of off the pitch, it's all a bit of a mess. The supporters are rightly hammering the ownership of the club. And he's basically just reinforcing that this is the team. This is the team you actually get in behind is us. It's not that, it's not them.
Strong. If you look in the replies, that is exactly what you see. Basically everybody loving Carlos and not so much liking how the rest of the club is done. Apart from Kanks at Foot Kanks, who simply replies, "Yo, tweet your team." Carlos didn't reply to that by tweeting his team. He's probably a little confused as to exactly what Kanks is wanting him.
Is that the boiler man's alias?
It might be. Yeah. Oh, happy days they were. Well done, Carlos Corberan. Anyway, we'll have another tweet of the week next week. That's just about going to do it for today, though. Remember to head to quinbet.com/promotions for all the latest offers from our sponsors. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it is at EFL What There. If you want to give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice, or just tell somebody that we're here, that'd be great too, as we look to make the pod even bigger and better in 2023. We shall be back next week, rounding up all the latest news in the Football League. But until then, enjoy wherever you are this weekend. It'll be a sort of FA Cup special for us next week, I suppose, seeing as that is what is taking centre stage. Join us for that if you can. Until then, goodbye.